Tonight's Shir, Parshas Kedoshim. Find the mitzvah of Dan Chavrecha Lechavzchus, the mitzvah to judge a person favorably. So if Galinsky brings a famous Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Kuf Kav Zayin Amud Beis, there was once a fellow who lived up north in the Galilee, and he traveled down south to work for somebody for 3 years. As the Shulchan Aruch says, a person is not allowed to hire himself out more than 3 years at a time. And that was it. He hadn't seen his family for 3 years. He was working very hard. So finally, it was Erev Yom Kippur. He approached his Baal HaBayis, the fellow he's working for, and he says, Tein li schari melech vazun et ishti uvanai. So give me my wages, my pay. I've been working here for 3 years. In the meantime, my wife, I left her without, you know, a source of parnasa, and she was probably, you know, borrowing money, whatever. The plan was that I'll come back after 3 years and pay off the debts, maybe start a little business with the extra money, etc. So fine, wants his money. What happens? The Baal HaBayis says, Ein li maos, sorry, I have no money. No money. That's it. So he says, okay, you don't have any money, so tein li peros. So at least give me fruit in the worth of the value of my wages. He says to him, Ein li. Nope, don't have any fruit. Tein li karka. Can I have at least land, the value of, you know, my wages? Ein li. No, don't have any of that either. Tein li behema. So give me some animals. Ein li. Finally says, Tein li kari muksuso, so give me pillows, blankets, something worth, so I can trade them in at least, you know, and have some money. Ein li. Don't have that either. So, Gemara says, the man took these few articles, personal articles that he had, and went home, halach lebeito bepachi nefesh, dejected. After all that work, he's coming home with nothing. Can you imagine? He walks in his house. What kind of, this is for Yom Kippur, Sukkot, what kind of Zman Simchasenu is this? It's nothing. Came back empty-handed after 3 long years. The Gemara continues and says that after the regal, after Sukkot, the Baal HaBayis took the wages of the man and came with 3 donkeys laden with food and drink and all types of goodies. And he went to his worker's house to finally pay him. So, Moore says, after they ate and drank, he gave him his pay. So it's interesting, he points out, it's medayik, it doesn't say he gave him his pay, and then they sat and ate and drank. He first sat and ate and drank, then he gave him. Can you imagine, you know, here's a guy that you worked for 3 years, and he didn't save you any money, left you empty-handed for the chag, and you invite him in, and here, have a meal. It's amazing. He should have said, get out of here. What are you doing here? No, instead he invited him in, because only after the meal did he pay him, meaning he didn't even know he was going to get paid yet when he served him this beautiful meal. Okay. So then, after he paid him, he asked him, the Baal HaBayis asked the worker, he says, Beshasha marti li tein li schari, v'amarti ein li mo'ot, v'macha shadtani. When you've asked me to pay you, and I said, I don't have any money, well, what were you choshed to me? So he said, I figured that you probably had some business deal that needed instant, you know, cash, and it came up just suddenly, and you, therefore, you didn't have any money to give me. He continued. He says, well, what about when I told you I didn't have any animals? Then what did you think? So you knew I had a lot of animals, you know, in the corral, and I said I don't have. Well, what were you thinking then? So he said, I thought that maybe they're rented out to others. And what about the karka, the ground? So I thought also it was rented out. And when I said to you that I don't have any fruit, what were you choshed me? So he said, I thought that maybe they're not my certain. And when I said I didn't have any even pillows and blankets, then what did you think? So he said, I thought that maybe you're made holy or makdish all your nechassim to Shemayim, and therefore you couldn't have hana, you couldn't have pleasure from any of your things. You were makdish everything to Shemayim. So Amar Lo, he answered him. He said, "Avoda." Avoda is a lashon neshvua. The Balabai said he swore and he said, "You know what? Kach haya. That's exactly what you thought. That's exactly what it was. That I wanted my son Horkanus." The Balabai said to be Osek in Torah, so I was Madir, I made holy all my Nechasim so that my son will learn Torah. And finally, afterwards, when I came to the rabbis in the south, they were Matir my Neder, because my son decided to learn Torah, which is good. So I was Matir my Neder then, so he can enjoy my Nechasim, and that's when I came here to bring you all these goodies, and of course your wages. The Gemara then concludes and says, "Ve'ata kishem shedantani l'schus, hamakom yadin otcha l'schus." And just like the Balabai said to this person, his worker, that just like you were done milachav schus, so he gave him a bracha that Hashem should dan you l'chav schus. That's the Gemara. Now, the Chafetz Chaim says, first of all, we see from here how far a person has to go when it comes to dunning l'chav schus. It's so far-fetched. Oh, he probably did this, he probably did that. And he came up with an excuse for every single thing until the wild excuse of he gave, he was makdish alas nechassim. But see how far it has to go when it comes to being done l'chav schus. But he asks a more passionate question over here. And that is that how does it work when it comes to Kadosh Baruch Hu being done l'chav schus? We can understand by a person. You see a person doing something, you don't know what's in that person's heart. You don't know why he's doing it. So you could think, well, he's doing it for good reasons or bad. And you say, you know what, you're supposed to have done l'chav schus. But when it comes to Kadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem knows exactly why the person's doing it. So how could he say to this worker that just like you were done milachav schus, let Hashem should dan you lachav. What do you mean Hashem should dan? Hashem doesn't have to dan lachav schus. Dan lachav schus, if you don't know, and then you have to say, you know, I don't know, so I'll judge him favorably. But Hashem knows exactly what's in a person's heart. So we answered based on a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah first. It says, Shlosh Svarim Niftachim Liyom Medan. In Rosh Hashanah, there are three books that are open. One book is for tzaddikim gemurim, that whoever is a tzaddik gemur, he gets written and sealed immediately for life. Next book is that of rishayim gemurim, people who have mostly sins. So these rishayim are immediately written and signed for death, the misa. And the beinonim, they are hanging in there until Yom Kippur. Now, when it comes to schus, person might have done many mitzvahs. However, if a Kodesh Baruch Hu looks at them and judges him with his midas hadin, with exact, precise judgment, then very few people, if any one of us, could withstand the din. Hashem says, oh, you did this mitzvah, you did it with 100%, did you do 100% halachically, with every little detail? Did you do it with simcha, did you do it lishma, etc., etc., with yira, or with ava, etc.? To say we did the any mitzvah completely, very, very hard. So if Hashem's going to judge our mitzvahs with midas adin, it's very good. It's very hard to be called a tzaddik and have mostly schuyos, mostly mitzvahs. And even if a person, you know, does, you know, all the mitzvahs, but what about his averas? So that's when it comes to the midas hadin. However, if a Kadosh Baruch Hu deals with us with his midas harachamim, with his attribute of mercy, different story. Then comes the mitzvah, says, okay, look, it comes from it lives in difficult times. Not everybody is so religious, and because that he did the mitzvahs, etc. And when it comes to his averas, Hashem could look and say, look, you know, okay, he did his averas, but he didn't know, he didn't realize the severity, etc., etc., etc. He can find reasons why it's not so bad. And as a result, he can end up being a tzaddik and have more mitzvahs than averas. So it all depends on Kodesh Baruch Hu judges a person, b'midas adin, or b'midas harachamim. So he explains that that's the word over here. That when it says that Hashem should judge a person, it means that Hashem really answers Mita Keneged Mita. If Hashem sees that we judge our fellow man favorably, we could look at the negative side or the positive side. If we zero in only on the negative, then Hashem said, look, I can do the same thing. Mita Sadin. However, a person judges his fellow man with Mita Sarachamim, it looks at the positive side when he sees a person doing something and say, he probably has good reason for it, etc. Like we see in the story, the worker did. So likewise, Hashem will answer and do the same. Say, look, I'm going to judge him favorably. Look at the good side. Mita Sarachamim. So it all depends how a person judges his fellow man. That's how Hashem judges him. And that was the bracha that the worker had was given by his boss. And to conclude, the Baal Shem Tov used to say, the Mishnah says in Avos, "Hevidan es kol hadam l'chavschus." So he says, what does that mean, you should judge? Who's a judge? We're not judges. We're not in court. So what does it mean you should judge your fellow man l'chavschus? So he says that, yeah, everybody's a judge. You're your own judge, as we said. Because however you judge your fellow man, how you look at your fellow man, you look at things favorably or not favorably, that's how you are going to be judged. So your judgment is based on how you look at your fellow man. So therefore everybody, in effect, is really a judge. We have two lavim in the Torah. It says in the pasuk, "Lo seilech rechil b'amecha, lo samod al dam reyecha, ani Hashem." Person's not supposed to speak lashon hara. Lo teilech rechil b'amecha. The pasuk continues, and a person should not stand by the blood of his fellow man. So you have to understand what's the connection between these two inyanim. Rabbi Yerucham Mimir used to say that if you walk by a group of people that are speaking about Ploni, a certain person, speaking Lashon Hara about him, he says that in his eyes, it's similar to a group of cannibals that are eating a person up. Sticking their teeth into the person, and then the blood is dripping down their chins. You'll say, well, come on, how can you compare speaking Lashon Hara about Ploni or eating him? So he says, right, you can't really compare. Because at least the people that are eating the person's dead. But here, this one who's speaking about his live person, he's drawing his blood while the person's alive. So he said, perhaps that could be a connection. Lo teilech rechil b'amecha, shouldn't speak lashon hara about a person. And as the pasuk considers, lo tamar al dam reyecha, because when you're speaking lashon hara, it's even worse than spilling that person's blood and then eating the person. It's one idea. However, Galinsky would like to suggest. He says, a person speaks lashon hara. Why is he doing that? Isn't it? Doesn't he realize? He says the reason is because unfortunately people always look at the faults of the other person and wants him to be sure to keep his kichiyuvim, whereas the person himself thinks that he's an angel, so this person's harming me. Why is he doing that? He should be keeping the Torah. Why isn't he keeping the Torah? Why isn't he doing the Torah what the Torah wants? And he doesn't realize that he himself has his own mitzvahs to keep. And therefore, so too over here, person says, lo tamar, doesn't this person realize that lo tamar al dam reyecha, that he's not allowed to do bad things to me? He says, yeah, but that's his mitzvah. Let him take care of that. You have a mitzvah, lo teilech rechil b'amecha. You're not allowed to speak bad about him. Right? His mitzvah, you're right, is to lo tamar al dam, but don't zero in on his mitzvah. How come you're not keeping lo tamar al dam reyecha? You just have to mind your own business. You have to keep the mitzvah you have to keep. And your mitzvah is, lo teilech rechil, don't speak bad about him. Everybody has their mitzvahs. Like they say, that when it comes to lending money, right, the lender has a mitzvah, lo yigos. You're not allowed to pressure, you can't pressure the borrower. That's his mitzvah. And the borrower, he has his own mitzvah, and that is priyas balchov mitzvah, that the payback alone is a mitzvah. So, What happens, though? The one that lends the money, he says, "Oh, you have a mitzvah to pay me back. How come you're not keeping your mitzvah?" And the one that has to pay, he says, "Come on, look, he goes, you're not allowed to pressure the borrower. Why are you pressuring me?" Everybody's zeroing on his fellow man's mitzvah instead of his own. Similar, says that the responsibility of a husband, says the Gemara in Yevamos, v'yichabdenu yoter migufo. He has to honor her more than his own body. And that is sometimes the wife reminds the husband. Whereas, what does the husband say to the wife? The Isha Ksheira Seretzon Baila, the Tanit of El Yoraba says. So he said, look, you have to do the Ratzon of your Baal, you want to be Isha Ksheira, the husband says. And the wife says, oh, you have to be Chabed me more than your goof. Everybody should look at their own mitzvahs. Similarly, when it comes to the chiyuv, you're not allowed to step into the area of your friend when it comes to his parnasa. Take away his parnasa. Hafsagas gvul. So what happened? That's one mitzvah. You know, don't do something which could take away somebody else's parnasa. And what is the other person? He zeroes in on the other mitzvah, which is that what? It says that a person, a mitzvah, the Gemara says in Yoma, that ein adam nogeh b'muchan l'chaviro kimelo neima. And just like the mezonos of a person is set on Rosh Hashanah, so too has chesronos. Therefore, Reuben could say to Shimon, look Shimon, what are you telling me that I'm stepping in on your parnasa? Says you have to realize that everything is set on Rosh Hashanah and I can't take away anything from you. So he's telling him to worry about his mitzvah. Everybody should look worry about his own mitzvah. The story is told there was once a town that they suffered terribly from a ganav, Pini the ganav. And every other night another house was robbed, and they knew who it was, Pini. But nobody ever caught him red-handed, but everybody knew that it was the job of Pini. One Rosh Hashanah, the Rav noticed something very strange, that Pini was davening here on Rosh Hashanah with the talus over his head, and he's crying. So the Rav said, oh, finally he's doing tshuva. So he came up to Pini after davening, and he said, Pini, you know, I saw the way you're davening, and does this mean that we're not going to have to suffer your gnevas anymore? That you've changed your way? So he says, no, not at all. He says, not at all. But I saw you were davening with such kavana and with tears in your eyes and shaking and so what do you mean? So he says, yeah. I'll tell you what I was davening. It says, we mentioned before the Gemara, that just like a person's mezonos is set on Rosh Hashanah, so too a person's chesronos, whatever he loses, any money he's going to lose that year, is already set on Rosh Hashanah. So I was davening to Hashem, and I was saying, Ribono Shalom, you know, just like these people's chesronos are nigs on Rosh Hashanah, so please Hashem, if they have to lose money, let it be through me. Let me be the one that takes away their money. Similarly, there was once a dayan that he didn't want to outwardly take bribes, shochad. So what did he do? He decided to take shochad with a shinui. What was that? He would tell the two litigants, when they would come for a din Torah in front of him, and they would tell him that, in the hallway, before I enter the beis din, you'll notice there's my shoes. I have two shoes. So he would tell one of them, my right shoe is, it's for you, and the tell the other person that my left shoe is for you. And then each of them would, if they wanted to, put money in his shoe. And then when the judge would put on his shoes, he'd feel which is tighter. He'd know there's more money in there, and he would make that person win the case. So fine. One day he did the same thing, and came to put on his shoes before the din Torah, and his left shoe went on really easy. His right shoe, it was so tight, he couldn't barely put his foot in. It was so filled with bills. So he says, fine, this is an easy one. So they come into the beis din, and then the dayan paskins, of course, in favor of the person that was connected his right shoe. Fine, they leave the court. The Dayan takes off his shoes, and he noticed that this right shoe, which was filled with bills, all right, but not money, it was just paper. So, what did he say? He goes, see, you can't trust people anymore these days. See, no, Muna and be people. Right? That's looking at the other person. I worry about himself. We have in this Exedra the mitzvah of Tochacha. It says, Hochiach, Tochiach es amisecha, velo tisa alav chet. What does it mean, velo tisa alav chet? So Rashi says, shelo talbin pana barabim. The person's not allowed to embarrass a person, probably. You can and supposed to rebuke a person, but not to the point of embarrassing him. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky Zatzal asked, he says, we have a rule. That is, ase doche lo tase. That a positive mitzvah pushes over off a negative mitzvah. So why doesn't the mitzvah, the positive mitzvah of rebuke, push off the negative mitzvah of not embarrassing a person? Second question, the Gemara says in Erechin, as machloikas, the mitzvah of tochecha, how far does it go? In other words, how much do you have to rebuke the person? So one opinion says, until the person hits you. Right? You keep saying, rebuke, 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 until he hits you. Or until he curses you. Another opinion. So he asks, what's this b'tur? Right? He gives, for example, he says, let's say your tefillin are in the hands of a tough guy. Okay? And you have to put on tefillin. And if you try to take your tefillin, he might hit you. Or he might curse you. So what? So you don't have to take them? You take them. Suffer the curse, suffer the, you got to do the mitzvah. So, same thing over here, you have the mitzvah of tochecha. So what, he's going to curse you, he's going to hit you, but you got to do what you got to do. How come here the mitzvah doesn't go that far? So Yaakov Galinsky like to answer, he says, the whole kasha here doesn't really exist. Why? Because you have to understand, what's the whole reason of rebuke? Why are we rebuking the person? We're trying to straighten the person out. We're trying to make the person see what he did wrong, accept it, and try to change. So if you're going to do so in such a way which is going to embarrass him, he's not going to accept the tochecha. So maybe how can we ask, how come tochecha doesn't push off the mitzvah, of negative mitzvah of embarrassing a person? Because if you're getting embarrassing a person, that's not rebuke, because he's not going to accept your rebuke if you embarrass him while doing so. And similarly, if you've got him so upset that he's going to hit you and curse you, once again, that's obviously such a person is not going to change. He's not gonna, the rebuke's not going to work. So therefore, Mela, it's understood why it's only until the point of hitting you or cursing you. Because once he starts that already, then rebuking is meaningless. Because the whole purpose, like we said, is to try to change the person positively. So where do we see a couple of examples of this? One's with Yosef Atzadik. When he was in the grave danger of sinning with Eishes Potiphar, at that moment, Chazal tell us, where it says in Sota, that he saw a vision of his father. He saw a vision of his father, of Yaakov Avinu, and in the window. And he said to him, Yosef, atidim achecha shikasvu alav ne'efod v'ata b'neim. In the future, on the stones of the Kohen Gadol, of the Avnei Eifod, you're supposed to be there with your brothers. Ritzoncha shimachesh shimcha b'neim. Would you like your name to be erased and not be part of it? Meaning, if we think about it, what should have Yaakov, or what would we said if we were Yaakov Avinu, and we see his Ben Zakunim about to do this terrible avera? We would say, Gevalt! What are you posheya? What kind of a chinuch did you get? That you're a vayashmi, and your father, and your grandfather, and you're bringing an embarrassment on yourself? And that's what we would probably say to Yosef. But no, Yaakov Avinu didn't get angry, didn't scream, didn't. Oh, he just told him very nicely. He says, look at what you can lose. You can lose eternity because of just that one moment of pleasure. You can lose your eternity. You don't want that, do you? Similarly, we find by Kain and Hevel. Kain brought his mincha, psolus, tuchuya, Hashem, wasn't interested. And what happened? he was upset. Hashem didn't accept his sacrifice. V'yichar kain l'ma'od v'yiplu panav. Now Kadosh Baruch Hu could have given it to him and said, oh, your fault, you're upset. What are you upset about? You bring this garbage as a korban and you're upset. How can you be upset? But no, Hashem doesn't tell him that. What does he say? He says, Lama charalach, why are you upset? Why did you fall on your face? Halo im teitiv says, as Sforno says, instead of being upset at the past, try to do better. If you try to do better, you can do better. Teitiv says, you can do good. Work on yourself. So that's called tochacha, to tell show the person that you want his good, and not to push him off, and to try to help him, and such a, if he feels that, then be'emet, that tochacha could have proper effect. He says that could be the pshat in the pasuk. Therefore, hochiach tochiach es amisecha. How? By not velosisa alachei. Don't emphasize the chet so much. Don't bring it. Don't blow it out of proportion, the sin that he did. Don't zero in on that, but rather show him the direction of how he can improve his ways, and that's the goal of tochacha. V'losa sisa alav chet. Rav David Pavarsky, Rav Shiva Panovich, Zatzal, he once said the following vort. He was a Talmid of Rav Yucha Mimir, Chanich of Kelm. He told the following. Gemara says in Erevin, famous Gemara, Daf Nun Dalid, story of Rabbi Frida, that he had a Talmid that everything he taught him, he had to teach him 400 times. He had to go over 400 times. And the story goes that once in the middle of his lesson, somebody came in and called Rabbi Frida to go come out to do a mitzvah, and he said, no, let me finish first with the Talmid. And he finished his 400 times, and Talmid this time didn't understand it, even after 400 times. He said, what happened? So Talmid said, no, I saw they were calling you, so I wasn't, concentrating so much. I thought you might leave me in the middle. She goes, no, don't worry about that. Until you understand, I'm not leaving you. So he went over another 400 times until he understood it. So Baskol came out and said, saw this tremendous, mysterious nefesh of Refrida, and he said to him, listen, I'm giving you an offer, right? Whatever you like. Either you can live for 400 years, connected the 400 times that you've taught the student, or you and your door will be zocha to Olam Haba. So he asked that I want me and my generation to have Olam Haba, and then Akash Baruch Hu told him, ten lo zeveze, give them both. Okay, famous Gemara. So Rav David asked the following. He says, now, let's try to understand. This Talmud, he had to be taught everything 400 times. Meaning, he taught him once, didn't understand it. Twice, didn't understand it. 10, 50, 100, 150, 100, 200, 300, 350, didn't understand. 399 times, didn't understand. 400, understood. Well, what happened all of a sudden? So he says, you have to say, therefore, that even though it doesn't appear necessarily to us that the first time he taught did anything, but it vaday did. In other words, how we have to look at it, the first time he taught him went it a little bit, but just a little bit. You can't even tell. Second time, a little bit more. Third time, a little bit more. A little bit, a little more, until finally the 399 almost added. Now he has it. Now it's a build up. It's not from nothing. He says that, brings the pasuk in our sedra, as we said before, a person has to rebuke his friend. So the Gemara darshens out the double lashon, hochiach tochiach, afilu mea pami. So one could ask, what do you mean afilu mea? I have to rebuke him 100 times. Well, if he was not mekabel the first time, second, 50th time, 80th time, why then will he on the 100th time? The answer is, like we said before, that doesn't work that way. It's not like nothing and then all of a sudden, but rather it's a build-up. Because the first time you rebuke him, it goes in, it penetrates, but maybe only a little bit. Second time, a little bit more, until sometimes you have to do it 100 times until it sinks in all the way. But you shouldn't be dejected in the first few times, because each time has an effect. Brings here a maisa. There was once an avreich, and he was had to go on the road, go on the bus, and he took with him his Shulchan Aruch to learn while he was on the bus. So he's sitting there, and all of a sudden, a young man sits down next to him and looks over and says, "Hey, what are you learning?" And he looked, and you see this boy, young man who was non-religious, he's like long hair, earring, whatever. But he was asking him, you know, "What are you learning?" So he said, "I'm learning the Shulchan Aruch." And he started explaining him what Shulchan Aruch is all about, this, that, whatever. And he had like a whole speech, you know, trying to mashpi on this guy for like a half hour. And all of a sudden, the boy says, young man says, "Oh, here's my stop. See you later. Goodbye." And he leaves, just like that. So he felt dejected. You know, he said, you know, if I saw that, you know, this young man, I thought he was taking interest, that my words had an effect, and he wants to maybe, you know, exchange telephone numbers, but I seen that, obviously just went one ear in one ear and out the other. My stop's here, goodbye, just left. I was like, well, I feel like I just wasted my time. I could have been sitting and learning here from the bus for half an hour. Instead, I'm talking to this guy that doesn't have any effect. So, feeling the way he did, he went to the stipler and asked him how we should look at the situation. So he said, very interesting, ties in, as we said before, that it's a famous Avos d'Rabbi Nasan Midrash, that Chazal asked, what was the beginning of Rabbi Akiva? He said he was 40 years old, and he didn't learn anything. Once he was by a spring, and he noticed that a rock had a hole in it. And he saw, hey, how did this rock get this hole? And he noticed that a water was dripping drop after drop on this certain rock, and until it made a hole in the rock. So he said to himself, wow, imamayim chakaku et ha'evin, eino din shedivrei Torah yichakaku et libi. If this water, which is soft, can make a hole inside this hard rock, so surely the Torah could make an impression on my soft heart. And immediately he went to go learn Torah. So, says the stipler, same word, like we said before. Said, what's pshat? A drop of water falls on the rock. It can't make a hole in the rock. Yeah, but another drop. Yeah, but if each drop can't make a hole in the rock, so when the first drop falls, doesn't do anything. So when the second drop falls, that becomes like the first drop. It's also not doing anything. Teretz is no. Like we said before, that's not how it works. The first drop, you have to say, had an impression, did something. What? Very, very, very minuscule. A drop on a rock, what can it do? Very minuscule, but did something. It has to do something. And the second drop did a little bit more. And the third drop, etc., etc. Until eventually it made a hole. But you have to say that each drop had an effect, or else you could never have a build-up that can make the hole. So too, he said, when it comes to this boy, you think you wasted your time when you spoke to this young man. He said, no, you were putting those drops, and every drop has an effect. You think, waste. No waste. He didn't change his ways just out of a half-hour discussion, but what you said made a little bit of impression on him. And you never know, never know. Alinsky said there once of Moshe Mordechai Schlesinger, that's all, he was very close to the stipler. And he recalls that there was once a bacher that was in yeshiva, and he went off, and little by little he felt no connection to Ruchnias and everything to the Kedusha, he just nothing, and he felt the attraction to the world out there, to the Tuma, until it got to the point where he left the yeshiva. So Moshe Mordechai tried to have an effect to, you know, speak to the boy, but nothing. So he thought, you know, maybe I'll take him to the stipler. So take him to the stipler. It says, "Kol adam sheish bo yirat shemayim dvarav nishmeim," the Gemara says. And the stipler, Vadai, is someone who has yirat shemayim, so maybe his words can have an effect on his boy. So he took the bachar to the stipler, and he sat him down, and he gave him a little musar shmuz. He said very nice way, of course. He explained to him how the taivas in this world is all worthless, and it's like drinking salty water that you think you've quenched your thirst, but it makes you even thirstier, etc. gets through, went through the whole, you know, Musar Shmuz of how one has to free himself of his personal desires, etc., etc., etc. So after speaking to the boy for quite a while, didn't have an effect. The boy got up, thank you, goodbye, and left. And that was that. So Moshe Mordechai afterwards then went into the stipler and said, "No." So the Bachar said, the Bachar that you brought me, as soon as he came in, I knew there was nobody to speak to. I can tell you right away that he's a slave to his desires in this world, and he's not in control of his heart, there's no chance that of changing his decision, what he wants to do. So Mordechai says, if that's the case, so how come you sat and spoke to him? You said as soon as he walked in, you realized that, so you should have said hello and goodbye, and that was that. How come you put so much time in speaking to the boy if you knew it was useless? So he says that there's a famous mashal that Rabbi Yisrael Solanter used to say. He said that when horses, sometimes they go out of control and they're running down the mountain and you can't hold them back and you're trying to stop the horses, but they keep going down, down, faster, faster, faster. So an experienced wagon driver, what will he do? He'll just jump off the wagon before it goes further down and then begin to walk on his own two feet slowly down the mountain, and while the horses are vroom, going down very fast, and he says if the horses won't break their legs and etc. when they're falling down, they won't get hurt, and the wagon will somehow stay in one piece, and it'll be waiting for them down the mountain, not in the best state, but then he can go on them and steer them and lead them. So he says, same thing over here. He says, this Bachar is flying down the mountain. So he says, I spoke to him. I knew very well that he's not going to listen right now. But like, I planted the seeds. I mentioned what I mentioned. And just put it there. So then when he goes down to the depth, as he's going down, 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 fine, he's going to get to the depth. And he's going to be, exhausted when he gets there. But who knows how much he's going to break down and what's going to, you don't know. But maybe he'll come out not so terrible. And then those words that I told him now will be able to have an effect. It's like the wagon driver when he gets down. If the matzav is not too terrible at the end of the road, then he can get back on and steer the horses. So too, these words that I told him, I knew now they were not going to have an effect. But I was hoping that, who knows, along the way, along the line, maybe they in fact will have an effect. And that's what Gemara says in Sukkah, that when a child begins to speak, Gemara says, and his father should teach him Torah. What does he teach him? Torah tzivalanu Moshe morasha kehilas Yaakov. Teaches the pasuk in Devarim. So he says, let me ask you. He says, it says when a kid begins to speak. When does he begin to speak? Oh, 1.5, 2 years old. He says, what am I teaching him? What does he understand? Torah Sivalanu. He understands what Torah is. Torah Sivalanu. What's a Tzivui? Moshe, who is Moshe? Morasha, what's the inheritance of the Kehila of Yaakov? He's 1 and 2 years old. He doesn't understand these things. So why am I teaching him these things? So we see from here that you have to plant this pasuk in him. And then, Bezrat Hashem, you plant the pasuk, one day it'll grow into great things.